written 12 books, including Aftershock and Beyond Outrage. That does it for our show. By the way, speaking of jobs, Democracy Now! Has two job openings, hiring a Linux systems administrator and an annual giving manager. Visit our website at democracynow.org for details. Happy early birthday to Sam Alkoff. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, Amate Nirmanshake, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, September 13th, 2013. Friday 13th has always been lucky for me. I don't know why. I just don't believe all that stuff, you know, not superstitious. We have some special guests in the studio all hour long. We're going to find out about the Dearborn Public Schools, latest issues, latest updates directly from the people at the top, at least. Especially the person at the top, Superintendent Brian Whiston. He's here with us along with Public Information Officer for the Dearborn Public Schools, my former student, Dave Mustonen. Just remember, if he gets in trouble, it's not anything I taught him. Okay. But I have just a very brief correction to start with. We had a caller call in who was somehow associated with Ford Motor Company last week and said the story that we mentioned about the 1,400 new jobs and the saving of the plant in Flat Rock for production, not only the Mustang, but now primarily the Ford Fusion, gave a simple number of 180-some thousand Fusions that were produced in July, and that's the way it was specifically worded in the story in the press and guide. And they said that's impossible, can't do that many per month anywhere, I guess. And turns out that probably was through July. Okay, so in the first 7 months of the year. And where were those made? In Mexico, folks. And in a follow-up story from Rick Hagelin at MLive.com, it was just a day or so later, they did a story about this plant. Ford's PR people got going like crazy on the Morning Joe show, okay, MSNBC. And, Ford has got 1,500 Ford Fusion jobs back in the U.S. No, they're adding those jobs, but they're still keeping all of their jobs in Mexico. Hermosillo, Mexico. And so I don't know how many Fusions will be produced in Flat Rock, but the point is some, but they haven't brought any jobs back from Mexico, in case even if I gave that impression. And that's not good or bad. We're always happy for more jobs here. So we'll see how many Fusions they actually turn out per month. Not that that matters, but we're glad for the extra jobs here. But certainly no. Even Ford, even in Mexico, they can't do 180,000 cars in 1 month. Okay, I'm glad we cleared that up. Don't want any misunderstandings anywhere, and certainly not in regard to our Dearborn Public Schools. I'm joined in the studio by my WHFR news director, and that is Dennis Reimar. So welcome, Dennis, to the hour.
Also a former student.
That's right.
Yeah. And you know, when I see you every week, so I feel like I'm always continuing to learn.
Demand that. Yeah,
I wonder if I'll get a grade for that.
anything he messes up, he tells me. I jump on him about it.
Sure.
Okay. So, Brian Whiston, Superintendent of Public Schools here in Dearborn, welcome to the Journal. And Dave has already explained who he was last time, and people can listen on the web. But give us a little bit about your own professional background and experience. And you've been here in Dearborn as our superintendent for the last 6 years.
Thanks for the opportunity to be on the show and talk about what's going on in Dearborn schools. We have a great school district. We always love to share information. So I'm in my sixth year here at Dearborn Schools as the superintendent. Prior to that, I was 12 years at Oakland Schools in Oakland County, where I oversaw several departments in the countywide school system. So my background, I did teach, but only for a short time period. Background was more in business and political science. So, but love being here in Dearborn, live here, lived here for the 6 years that I've been superintendent, and love the community and love the school district.
Here's a question that sometimes throws people. Why did you choose to become a school administrator, in this case a superintendent?
Well, I must have been crazy that day. No, I've enjoyed it. I've got the best job in the world, and I'm very thankful. You know, when they were looking for a superintendent here in Dearborn, the people doing the search sought me out and said they thought I would be a good match for Dearborn. I was at the director's level at the Oakland schools, and I kind of enjoyed being, you know, behind the scenes, not in the top spot. But sometimes you wonder how you could do in the top spot. So after they talked to me a couple times, I said, well, I might as well throw my hat in the ring and see what I can do. Other school districts over the years had asked me to apply, but I had always believed as superintendent I should live in the community, and I had kids in high school, and I wasn't willing to, you know, move them at the time. So Dearborn came along at a time when my kids were out of school, and it was a great opportunity. Dearborn's just a great community. I love living here. I do a lot in Detroit. I do a lot in Ann Arbor. Sorry, David. You know, and so it's just a great place to live, work, raise a family. I think Mayor O'Reilly's got the city moving in the right direction. Great partnership between the city and the school districts and the business community. And I think this just is a great place to work.
And so no regrets yet.
No okay. Regrets.
Because, and I just did a little cursory look at the scope of what the Dearborn schools really are, and I'm not sure many of our listeners even, and I've only lived in Dearborn since 1979, so you'd think I'd know a little more, but maybe you could give us some description of the size and complexity of the Dearborn school educational system.
Yeah, Dearborn has actually grown into the third largest school district in the state of Michigan. Detroit's number one, Utica's number two, and Dearborn is now number three. And I think most school districts, 500 plus, are shrinking, and we've actually grown over 1,500 students now over the last four or five years. Or longer, but I mean, we've been continually growing every year, and because of that, we're now the third largest district. Our budget's over $172 million every year, which is bigger than most companies or businesses out there.
Larger than the city of Dearborn's budget?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah. Probably by many times fold. And so it is a large enterprise. We have over 2,400 employees. You know, over 1,000 classroom teachers, and we have 80-some administrators. You know, I'm proud that in Dearborn we spend more money in the classroom. If you compare us to a lot of districts, we have a lot more money going into the classroom and a lot lower going into administration. We had Plant Moran do a study that showed we were very efficient in doing that, and since then, this year, I've cut an additional about $800,000 in administrative cost out of the district. So we continually try to get leaner and meaner at the administrative end and get more resources into the classroom. Our class sizes this year, you know, when you say average, there's always plus or minus, but the average is about 24, 25 kids per classroom, which we're very proud of, because compared to our neighboring districts, they average about 3 to 5 more per classroom. At least last year they did. I haven't seen the numbers this year.
I found an interesting statistic, which may not be current because it's from the tech report or the tech plans that the district had from, I think, 2012 through 2015, so they were probably written before that, but it said that in this district, 42.5%, almost 43% of the student population speak a language other than English. Oh, no, this is for the city of Dearborn. In the city of Dearborn, almost 43% speak a language other than English at home. So I'm not sure what the percent is of the students.
Yeah, about 7,000 students in Dearborn do have other languages spoken at home, and about 80 different languages, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
it's 80 not just different Arabic. Countries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody, it's a lot of Arabic, but a lot of different countries, Russia and others, that we deal with. And it does complicate educating students, but it's a good thing because it gives us the opportunity to help those students be successful. But certainly we got to teach them English and help them understand the language so that they can learn reading, writing, and math.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the current student population, K-12, is like 20,000 about?
We're hoping last year it was 19, just a little over 19,000. Mm-hmm. We think this year will be about 19,400.
Wow, yeah. And in terms of number of schools even, I found a list here. It looks to me like at least 31 different buildings, and there's three special programs, and I'm not sure, like Michael Berry Career Center is a separate building too, for example. So, I mean, 30, 35 buildings you have to maintain and upgrade and be concerned about. That's a lot of buildings. I mean, Henry Ford Community College probably here on this campus has 12 or so, and we have some other around town, but 35, my goodness, and some of them pretty big, like the high schools, of course. Just a little question here, though. I see we have middle schools, intermediate schools, and K-8th grade school. Well, I think I understand that, but that...
So we had different varieties. I mean,
yeah, in my day, a junior high was grade 6 through 8, and then I sort of got lost and confused over the years as to, you know, why they're all of a sudden called middle schools, and then intermediate, I didn't know what was that between what, lower and higher?
Yeah,
or?
You know, the Salina Intermediate has grades 4 through 8, and then there's an elementary building right next door to it that has preschool through third grade. We do have different configurations in our schools. They can be preschool up to fifth grade. They can be 4-8 buildings. We have the traditional 6, 7, and 8. Our high schools are all 9 through 12. So different schools can have a different variety of age group of students in them. It's not they're not all the same.
I think it's important to point out that although the configuration for the grade level may look different at different buildings, the curriculum is the same throughout.
Right.
So if I'm a 7th grader in a K-8 building or I'm a 7th grader in a middle school, it's the same curriculum, mm-hmm. It's the same program. Yeah. It's just the configuration of the building.
That was the voice of Dave Mustin, and by the way, speaking for the first time today.
Sorry, jumping
just
in.
Just so our listeners know, who is that voice?
And this is Dennis. Yeah. My question is, so there was really no advantage to having a different configuration other than maybe convenience?
Well, logistically, there can be an advantage, but also there can be some advantages when there's articulation between that elementary grade and that middle school grade. So the elementary and middle school all being in the same building, a K-8 building, the teachers can collaborate more, the students are easier to transition, there's not all that trauma that goes on sometimes when kids go from one school to another school. So there can be some true advantages in that aspect.
Yeah, that's the so-called one-room schoolhouse concept. Again,
sure.
If you have enough faculty and the facilities are appropriate and you're not overloaded with large numbers, then that's very supportive and comforting to have, like, the same, not just one teacher, but maybe several teachers for, like, K-8 at the two schools that have that. Nonetheless, you can do that in other ways. I mean, it doesn't mean it's
right.
A clear advantage, but I understand that the curriculums are all the same pretty much, or expectations at each grade level throughout. But just, thank you for that, a little clarification there. I'd like to stick, obviously, they talk about gorillas in the room. The two biggest issues that we definitely are going to cover for those just tuning in to the journal is the recent rating specifically of Edsel Ford High School as a priority school and getting one of the so-called lowest ratings, a red color in the state. So we are going to talk about that in detail and the changes that have come about and so on, and of course the bond issue that's coming up in November for the Dearborn Public Schools. We want to give information about that as a licensee of Henry Ford Community College, which has the same people on it as the Dearborn Board of Ed. By the way, we cannot legally by our license endorse let's say, a vote in favor of the bond issue. And by the way, all opinions expressed in the show are those only of the speakers, not necessarily anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. Just to be clear about that, but we hope probably the second half of this hour will be about the bond issue it's referred to, and I know Dave knows exactly what each letter in the word SMART means, so we'll let him enunciate that. These are complex issues. There's a lot of things going on in the public schools. There aren't a lot of easy answers or simple answers because there's so many students involved, so many people, so many buildings. I think it's amazing there's any consistency at all, I mean, going on. But when you have an operation this large, I mean, we're probably not going to be forced to merge with anybody else for a while, considering how big we already are, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, they say the ideal school district, you know, is 400, 500 kids, so I don't think they'll be asking us to merge with anybody.
Right, yeah, okay. Now, there's just a few quick questions that come up here on this show that I just didn't know the answers to over the last, let's say, half year or so. First of all, child care. There are child care facilities at many, if not most, of the school buildings, and I know that the child care facility at Henry Ford Community College is actually run by staff that is accountable directly to the Dearborn Public Schools.
Yeah, it's an offering to help parents who work, who need to drop their students off before school because they have to get to work early or they have to work late, so they go to child care after school is over until the parents get home from work. So it's a convenience factor to parents to provide an opportunity to provide that educational kind of setting for preschool so that and before and after school for older other grades, so that it's a convenience to those parents.
And typically, especially in preschool, there's Montessori options too in Dearborn. I know at the college facility, at least the sign still says Montessori, so there's still some Montessori instruction.
Yep,
here.
We have over at our Howell School, we do provide Montessori program each year, and each year we have to do a lottery because there's an interest in that. So if we can find some more space, we'd like to add some additional classrooms to meet the needs of willing of the parents.
Yeah, my daughter, who I mentioned a lot on this show, I'm very proud of her. My only daughter, you know how that goes. But she was in Montessori, not in Dearborn, but she was in Montessori before she started in the Dearborn schools. And I think it was a tremendous advantage. And I've read books about the philosophy. And now all of the daycare, though, there's an extra charge for that. Just like pay for play athletics, there's an extra charge.
Yes, there's a charge.
Pretty reasonable, though, I know, even at the daycare facility here at the college. So certainly comparable, anyway, to what people might find elsewhere. That's great. The special education program, it's mandated that that students identify that have special needs of a actually quite a wide variety somehow need some accommodation by the public school districts. And but this is extra money that we have to spend. Do we get extra budget money from the state?
Well, we're very proud of our special education program and department and offerings. I mean, about 10% of our students receive special ed services. On a statewide average, it's more like 12 to 13%. So our special ed team is doing a very good job of identifying students, providing support, and having students then no longer get those services, so we stay around that 10%. We do get some additional money through PA 18, which is a countywide millage. We get some additional money from the state of Michigan for some special ed programs. We run some countywide programs where it doesn't make sense for each district who has a limited number of children that may need a service, so we combine school districts and we provide those offerings, and so we again get funding from PA 18 for that. So do we get reimbursed for all of the cost of special ed? No. Federal government promised to fund 40% of the special ed additional cost, and it's probably around 16-17% of actual reimbursement. So, but you know, we have to provide the services for every child, and we want every child to be successful to either enter college or work life, and so it is an important service that we provide.
Yeah, and can't even go down the list of all the different types of needs there are, educational needs there are in these categories, but the one that my daughter suffers from the most, or suffers with the most, is the EI students. They're probably the greatest challenge. Can you briefly define what that is? What kind of student would be in that category?
emotionally impaired students. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a student who has gone through testing with our social workers and our special ed staff, and they need emotionally support, extra emotional support. They're suffering from different things that are impacting them. And so it is, you know, some students are very challenging to work with, but it's our responsibility to meet those challenges. And, you know, some of those students get education in a controlled classroom, and some of their subjects they may go out into a general ed classroom. And if they do that, then the parapro follows them, because we do want every student to have a good education. And so no matter how difficult the challenge, we have to meet those challenges for those students.
Well, as I've said on the air, and I'm not putting down Southfield schools, but according to my source, when they mainstream students, they have one instructor responsible for the special ed students, and the description is just sort of hides out in an office somewhere in the building until there's a problem. And with the EI students, there's a frequent problem. So and they've lost somehow their sort of a part-time help for the teachers. I mean, my daughter didn't get a certificate in special ed, and she doing the best she can, and she's very smart, but it's really limiting that sort of mainstreaming. And having like eight EI students out of 35 is really hurting what she can do with the others in terms of her science class at middle level. Well, that's my sad story and hers.
The other thing I do want to mention, though, mm-hmm. different here in Dearborn, kind of groundbreaking, is that we are doing co-teaching, where we have situations where we have special ed teacher and a general ed teacher, so there's two teachers in the classroom to provide support to all of the students in the classroom. Okay. The special ed teacher works with all students in the general ed. So we really are trying to meet the needs of every student, and you'll see our test scores in special ed have gone up dramatically over the last couple of years. Still has a long way to go, but it's come up because of these things that we're doing.
Well, because of the language challenges that so many students come from households that actually speak a language other than English in their homes, I mean, among their family, what are we doing with, what can we do, what have we been doing with bilingual instruction? Do we have classes taught in Arabic and then taught in English?
All of our instruction is in English, but sometimes we do use the student's native language to help them understand a topic. So we're teaching them in English, but if they're not getting it, the teacher may use that student's natural language to explain it to them and then go back to English.
So all
of our instruction is in English, but we support the student. Just like if you or I went over to Germany and we started going to school and we were sitting there and the German teacher's talking in German, we wouldn't understand it. Maybe you would, but I wouldn't. And so I would have to have assistance. So that's the way to think about it.
Okay. So we've actually hired I don't know what number, but a good number of teachers, especially for jobs in some areas of town where there's more people growing up with language other than English, that are bilingual themselves. That's what you're
either
saying.
Teachers or parapros or contract through the county. So there's different ways we try to get the language support into the classrooms. Because some, you know, if it's a Russian dialect and only, you know, there's sometimes hard to find people, so we work with the county and other providers.
Well, I assume that teaching English, though, to people that don't have that sort of immersion at home in English is a special challenge. So do we have any supplemental or special classes in English?
Yes, we do. I mean, we do help provide additional services before school, after school. We'll pull the kids out of the classroom to provide some additional support. The other thing we do is ask parents to come in and get educated on English so that it helps them. So we actually do run classes in a lot of our buildings to help parents understand English, because we know education is a partnership between the parents and us. We have the kids, if you look at a year, we have the kids 10-11% of the time. Mm-hmm. The parents have them the rest, so we need to work in partnership. So we do spend some time trying to help parents also understand English so that they can work with their students on the basic things that we're asking them to help.
I'd just like to jump in here, just kind of put this in perspective too. A lot of people think, well, you know, if these kids are coming to you in kindergarten and first grade and, you know, they can't speak the language, just put them in but the kids don't all come to us in kindergarten and first grade. They come to us in grades K through 12 speaking on a spectrum. So kids can be anywhere from a 1 to a 5, meaning they have absolutely no English skills, all the way up to 5 where they've graduated out of the ELL program and they now can have the ability to not only speak the language but to comprehend the subject matters that are being taught to them. Our district has a proven track record over the years of moving kids through that spectrum faster than any other district. Mm-hmm. Normally it takes anywhere from 7 to 8 years to move a kid through there. We've been able to do it in about 5 years.
So, 3 to 5.
Yeah, 3 to 5 years. So our program, you know, we've had a lot of success at getting kids through this program, getting them to the levels that they need to get to so that they can learn in English, because that's really what we want to be doing. I mean, that's the most effective way.
Because the comprehension of the instruction in English obviously relates to the success with all the other programs, all the other subjects and therefore some of the all of the tests given, the assessment tests are given, are in English, of course, too.
That's
so
right. That's right.
It's a special challenge there. Okay. We're going to take just a little break here. Just for one announcement, I'm going to let our guest maybe take a swig of their water bottles. But we'll take just a minute and 30 seconds to tell you about a benefit concert coming up for WHFR a week from tomorrow. And, yeah, it's kind of indie rock, but it's fun. It's down at a venue on Gratiot in Detroit that's very close to the Eastern Market. But take a listen to this, and if you're interested, come on down a week from tomorrow.
An evening of experimental sounds, a WHFR benefit at Trinasov's Saturday, September 21st at 8 p.m. WHFR is excited to have our latest fundraising concert at Trinasov's in Detroit. This evening of experimental sounds will feature performances from local shoegazer indie band Cruise Italy,
waves like trains crash.
Local experimental group Arthur Crow, and Madison, Wisconsin Casio pop artist Stephanie Rerick Jr. This evening has a suggested donation of $7 at the door, but has a sliding scale of $5 to $10. Doors open at 8 p.m. and music should start by 8:45. All donations at the door benefit WHFR. Trinasov's is located at 1464 Gratiot Avenue in Detroit, near Eastern Market. For more information about this event, please check out our website, WHFR.FM. See you at Trinasov's on Saturday, September 21st.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and we're talking on the WHFR Journal today to Superintendent Brian Whiston of Dearborn Public Schools and Dave Mustonen, who is the Public Information Officer, and of course Dennis Rymore, as my colleague, is also here, along with myself, Jay Koronick. So just to continue, a couple small topics before we talk about the Edsel Ford High School issue and the bond proposal coming up in November. One is... something to be very happy about, well, a couple of things to be very happy about, and that is the Henry Ford early college program within the high schools and related to us, I guess, but I noticed there's also a collegiate academy. Dave, could you explain the difference between? Is it all the same? Or
Two different programs with...
Go.
Okay, you're right. Two different programs. Our early college program is a partnership between Henry Ford Hospital and Henry Ford Community College. Mm. That program has been in effect for 6 years now. And students start that program in ninth grade. They're pretty much locked into that program. It leads them to a high school diploma and possibly a degree in the medical field or certification in the medical field, and then they step out into the workforce or they could continue their college. Mm. So it's a very set program. you know, you start ninth grade and it's one kind of course for a medical field. Excellent program. We've had a lot of success there. Mm-hmm. Compare that to the brand new program that we just started this year, our Henry Ford Collegiate Academy. Again, a great partnership with the college. Students really start this program in 11th grade. They have to have some qualifying test scores on the plan test, which is given in 10th grade. They have to be on track for graduation and some other qualifications. But if they get into this program, it's a great program. It allows students to graduate in 5 years with both a high school diploma and a associate's degree, either in applied arts or science, mm-hmm. either one. They can then take that degree. They can... if they want to go into the workforce, that's fine, but they can transfer. They can transfer to a four-year university. And here's the beauty. This is the real great part about it. It's all paid for by the district. Books, classes, fees, everything. So for a parent who may have two or three children, putting them into this program, getting them into this program at an average cost of maybe $20,000, you know, per kid or so, they're saving, you know, $60,000 to $80,000 in college cost, and we all know right now that's a big topic: the cost of college, the cost of these student loans, and what have you. The other great thing about this program is the students are still connected to their home high school. They can play football. They can be in the plays. They can be on student council. They go to prom. They walk in their 12th grade graduation commencement ceremonies. Mm-hmm. So all of those experiences that make up the high school experience are part of what they can do, with the bonus that they're, you know, getting their college degree.
And that all happens in 2 years? 11th grade, 12th grade?
11, 12, 13.
Okay, there's an extra year.
There's an extra year, yes.
And they, and probably more and more classes here at Henry Ford Community College.
That's right.
But normally it would take 6 years, right?
Right.
Four years of high school, two years of the program, that's six years. Yeah. They get this in five, so they actually do it 1 year faster.
Right.
And I do want to plug and thank the Board of Education for bringing this program to Dearborn Schools, because, you know, this really, as David says, my four kids, it would have saved me well over $100,000 to $150,000 as a parent, and they're going to get a great education right here at Henry Ford Community College. And there's programs that the president and the board are working on so that they can finish their four-year degree yeah. here as well. So this is just an exciting opportunity for parents to get an education for free, the first 2 years of college at no cost to the parents. That's books, fees, tuition, everything. And parents' only responsibility is to get the student.
Also, it seemed to be a really good incentive, not only for the parents working with their with their children, but also for the children to move ahead in a higher level of education and to be more focused on, you know, the work world and getting out there as soon as they can. And I mean, just it seems like it's great benefits for all. By the way, since I've grown up in Dearborn, I think about two or three superintendents back when that gentleman, whose name I can't remember, was first hired, he said, you know, we've already got advanced placement. We've got Henry Ford Community College here. We need to have early start, and we need to incorporate those. Never happened. That'd be too radical, I guess, for 30 years ago. Although when I was in high school at Flat Rock, Michigan, little Flat Rock High School, we had instruction. The seniors had instruction, real college classes from Eastern Michigan University. I don't know if they're still doing it. So I got a head start on four-year college, and in fact, college English is a lot more intensive than typically high school English. No disrespect to high school English, but it was great to know what the standards were. And when I got to college and had to write papers for, you know, non-English classes, I was ready to go. I knew what they were expecting, and I was already sort of up to speed. So that's a tremendous advantage. And, of course, the full first 2 years, they're up to speed in many areas of knowledge across the board and ready to go into their field faster. We have a tremendous resource here at the college, and it's just great that we finally got this partnership. So hope that will grow. The other item I had is, and after many years of layoffs, and I know not all the teachers who are laid off in the springtime sort of notified that they may not continue or can't continue, a lot of those people are hired back as budgets are finalized, as the state finally figures out what to pay. But this year, it's wonderful. I mean, I kept adding up how many were laid off. Is there anyone left? But this year, and I'm sure many of those were hired back, but this year we hired 59 teachers to start the school year. So perhaps Superintendent Wisdom, you can explain, how did that happen?
Well, I think it's an exciting time in Dearborn, and we do concentrate on class sizes to try to keep them as small as possible. We did have some people retire that allowed us to do this. We do have a couple people still on layoff because they teach certain classes that, you know, we don't have a need for, but it's very exciting. At the board meeting the other night, we brought these people in, and they introduced themselves to the Board of Education and the community, and just the excitement of the new teachers that they bring is just a great time in Dearborn. And it was really because we want to concentrate on class sizes. We did have some people take leaves, and we did have some retirements. So a combination of all of those things allowed us to really go out there and hire a great number of new teachers.
And, of course, there's so many buildings, so many different kinds of classes and different purposes, but average class size, is it, I hope, around 30? Or
Well, in elementary, it's about 24, 25 to 1.
Oh, great, great.
When you get up into middle school and high school, you're looking at 30. 30 to 1. Of course, gym classes, as we all remember, are bigger than that, but we try to keep every class around 30 to 1. But as we continue to grow, that becomes more difficult, but that's exciting because that does mean we can hire
so many nearby schools. Okay, Southfield for my daughter. 35 plus in a classroom, and that's middle school, 35 plus, including those 8 EI. Yeah, it's just not workable. I mean, I was a teacher for 40 years here, and I did, before I started at Henry Ford, I did a lot of part-time teaching at all grade levels, from first grade to 12th grade at three or four different districts. And I don't know how people can get any sort of lesson across to even the majority of students when you have so many. I mean, I just don't know how it's possible. And, of course, in my day, we didn't have intense computers or PowerPoint displays. Maybe that'll help extra bodies sink in, but I think also they may start dozing off in the corner or somewhere if you turn down the lights a little bit. It's got to be the key factor for me, again, assuming that all teachers are competent, know their subject matter, have great lesson plans and goals, and most do, I believe, but to have too many students. Well, that's wonderful news. Congratulations. And all those that retired early, I hope they have a good retirement, and thank you. But that's just great news. Okay, now not so good news. We have to talk about Etzel Ford High School and its rating as red, or in the category of needing extra help by the state. What were the various, first of all, I have to say, and of course my opinion, but any sort of rating system that's got to use colors is just stupid and really has no validity at all.
Sorry, Homeland Security.
Sort of like Homeland Security, where it turned out that every day was a yellow day or an orange day.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we're always under threat. Okay, big deal. Get the colors out of there. I mean, with education, of course, there's always been assessment. But these categories, were there five different colors? And the results, even locally among different districts, the colors or their categories don't make sense. So maybe you could explain what gets you into a red category, Superintendent Wisdom.
So let me start the big picture, and then we'll work down to Etzel Ford very quickly. First of all, we're just accredited by North Central, the highest accreditation as a school district can receive. And that was a very time-intensive. There was people from all over the country came in, looked at our school district, and look at what we're doing, and we received the highest accreditation possible.
That's great.
Secondly, from the state of Michigan and this color system that you mentioned, we are ranked the same as Plymouth Canton, Novi, Birmingham, Bloomfield, Troy, Northville, Rochester. We're in the mix of the same color as those school districts as a school district.
As a district, yeah.
In the rating system, we also have 8 reward schools, elementary and middle schools, that are out-achieving what the state thinks they should be achieving, so they're called reward schools.
What color did they get?
Gold.
Green.
Yeah, they should get gold.
There's green, lime green, right. Yellow, orange, and red. So, but that's even kind of interesting as well, because a school can end up with a, can be a reward school, but still end up with a yellow color, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Does this have to do, you mentioned at the outset, does this have to do with Common Core standards, too?
Not yet. The Common Core standards.
What is it based on, this rating system? Now?
So in elementary, it's the MEEP test. In secondary, it's in high school, it's the MME/ACT test and your graduation rates. All of it includes participation rates, making sure you have 95% or more of your students participating in each exam. And it looks at a combination of going back 4 years and looking at growth and also 2 years. And then it looks at your top 30% of your students, how they're performing, and your bottom 30% and how they're performing. So there's a lot of different ratings, or a lot of different things that go into the rating system. So, again, we had 8 reward schools in this rating system, and we did have Edsel Ford that was named a priority school. We're very sad about that. If you would have looked at Edsel Ford's performance 2 years ago compared to last year, we wouldn't be rated, because the school saw significant growth in achievement in every area and saw an increase in graduation rates. But they went back 4 years. So do we have a problem? Yes, we're taking it head on. We had some of our best teachers move into Edsel Ford. We have added an hour of instruction at Edsel Ford for all students. Now, if students are reaching the test scores that are expected, then they do get options. We're changing instruction in the classroom over the last few years. We're expecting every student to be successful. We're providing professional development to the staff on a series of initiatives to increase student achievement in the classroom.
And
so
that's
until the state gave us this. This is something we've been doing over the last couple of years.
I'm sorry, even more professional development than they already were receiving. I mean, your district does that as a matter of course all the time.
Right.
But there's an extra assessment there. Well,
Edsel Ford's a great school. I would send my children there. Students get a great education. It's a partnership between us and the parents. Are we disappointed by this rating system? Yes, we are. Edsel Ford is a proud community. You talked about your daughter graduating from there.
Yeah. My two kids.
And I think you'd say that your kids got a great education there. So a lot of good things going on at Edsel Ford. Good great staff, great administration. We will turn this around. We're not going to let this define who Edsel Ford is. Now, saying all that, we are frustrated with the state. I do want to say that as adults, we would never allow anyone to come in and tell, we're going to just pick a week out of the year, and we'll say the first week in November, we're going to determine if you, us as adults, are good at our jobs during that 1 week out of the year, and then judge whether you are successful on that 1 week. And I just don't think that's fair. We do it to kids. It's wrong. Now, saying that, we own it. We're going to fix it. And we're going to continue to make sure Dearborn schools are the best school districts in the state of Michigan.
Well, I can understand your frustration. First of all, this is the first year that these various criteria have been used to come up with this rating system, whether it's colors or numbers or whatever they use for ratings. And whenever you have that kind of system, whatever the subject, I think the first year you're going to see there's some problems, inconsistencies, or things are just wrong that don't add up, because it's a huge system that you're crunching numbers and maybe just looking for a week or whatever, and there's bound to be problems, and that's got to be corrected. But the system began where? The state legislature.
Actually, the state superintendent. No Child Left Behind on a national level said every 100% of the kids were going to be proficient by 2014. And they realized, well, not every student can be 100%. I mean, not any one of us all can be 100% across the board in every subject. So they said, okay, states, if you want to do something different, come up with a revised plan. So our state Department of Education and our state superintendent came up with this revised plan, looking at the top 30%, looking at the bottom 30%, and comparing how you are doing, looking back 4 years at some data, looking at 2 years and other data, looking at graduation rate. So that is a plan he submitted to the federal government, which they approved in place of the original No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind originally, focusing on every child is great. We can't get 100% of the kids to score 100% on anything, but certainly we have to do the best we can to get all children prepared for college and life.
And for those areas needing help to get to whatever rating is appropriate for that system, No Child Left Behind, infamously, was never properly funded to even achieve those goals from the federal government down. And then there's Common Core standards and they're not well funded. Can you explain Common Core standards?
Common Core, we
but
are.
Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't impact on this rating for
not
Apple
yet,
4.
But they will be moving forward.
Oh,
the state of Michigan and has the governors of many states have gotten together to come up with these Common Core standards. This is something that we in education are in favor of. It's higher level thinking. It's transferring what I learned in one subject to another subject. It is the direction that we ought to be going. It is upping the game. It is expecting more from students. The problem is some elected officials in Lansing, you know, see this as someone taking over education at some international level and taking the power away from local units of government. We don't see it this way. We see that whether it's Brian Wiston is attending school in Dearborn or I'm attending a school in Florida, I ought to be held to the same standard. Because we know in this day and age with technology and as much as people move because of jobs, that students should be learning the same thing. Now, how we teach it should be left up to us. Mm-hmm. How the subject is taught should be left up to the classroom teacher who is the expert. But saying that we want all math students who are taking algebra to learn these, you know, 20 core standards, that's good. We support that, and we want to be held accountable to that. So as we are moving forward, there will be a new test to replace the MEEP and the MME/ACT based on the Common Core. And that test is something that's coming, and we won't do well on that test the first time. It's because it's a new way of testing. It's a new way of thinking. But it is the right thing because it is upping the game, expecting more out of students.
And we already have in place, and this was State of Michigan required, new graduation requirements for so many classes of certain types. Right? That's already
correct.
Kicked in. And
like yeah, actually
more foreign language or?
Yeah. More foreign language, more math. Four mm-hmm. years of math, algebra. But Dearborn had those requirements before the state law went into place.
I know.
So Dearborn, and that was before I came here, so they were forward-thinking, the Board of Education.
Yeah, I really couldn't understand why some schools, some places in Michigan, didn't have those requirements. I mean, even Flat Rock High School, oh my God, in 1964 had requirements very similar to what you have in Dearborn today. And it's true, out of my graduating class of 110, only 10 of us went to college in those days. A lot of people didn't go to college. They just went to a job at a factory then. And it actually sort of gave them a living, I mean, at least for the next 30, 40 years anyway, until the auto industry sort of crashed here. So you didn't need that many to go to college, but we had a very good college prep curriculum with a lot of requirements. Even if they're going to work at the gas station, they'll be able to speak French. So, okay, I know that sounds ironic, but
now you just hit on a topic that someday I'd love to come back and talk to you, and that's being college ready.
Yes.
Because, you know, the state says the Dearborn students are about 20% college ready, and yet we have 1,900 classes taking last semester where students were getting A's and B's here at Henry Ford Community College. Mm-hmm. So our kids are college ready. I think we have to define what it means to be college ready, because if a student who may be needing a little extra help in math or language arts, so they take one class at the college, they now are college ready. I think we have to have an honest and open conversation about what it means to be college ready. But we did have 1,900 students take classes here and get A's, B's, and C's. They're college ready.
And we're not an easy school. I mean, we have requirements that are appropriate to a four-year school. Dennis, a quick question. I've got a quickie, and we're going to go into the smart bond.
No, I have nothing.
Oh, well, hi. He's waving at me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
No. And, well, I got a B in Jay's class, so, and I think I'm the only one. That was the only B I had in my, so I can attempt to his.
I'm very tough.
He's a tough teacher.
Old school, You have to learn something to
ruined
get a
my GPA.
But B is actually very good.
B is a good grade.
I thought it was very good.
I am a perfectionist.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm retaking that class.
Before we talk about the smart bond, which is very important, and of course the district will get a lot more information from Dave Mustonen and various sources from the school district about what that's all about, there's a quick question that somebody brought up about Edsel Ford. I think it came up in one of the articles I read about the meeting with the parents at Edsel Ford, and it was about the additional, and this is amazing, additional cost to bus the students that have to stay at Edsel Ford, the extra hour, like $2 million more a year. You had to rent buses, and you got to get drivers for those?
What happened was, is one of the state requirements, we have to spend 20% of our Title I funds. So we get $10 million. So out of that, we had to set aside $2 million to help Edsel Ford. Out of that $2 million, it's about $500,000, I think, in additional transportation cost, because we have to run buses at the 210 and 220 and 320. And so, yes, we are spending additional funding on transportation.
Which seems a little bit crazy that that money could be spent on curriculum or other kinds of special education needs of
teachers.
One sort or another. Yeah. But, and then somebody brought up, well, why don't you just make everybody in the whole district go an extra, or just swap, you know, everybody start later or something? I don't know. No, that wouldn't work.
But I would
everybody
would
have to have the extra hour.
Yeah. I would love to have every student attend Dearborn Schools an extra hour. Now, that doesn't make me very popular with the students and staff.
but then it wouldn't have had any busing cost, right?
Right? But I would have had a lot more cost in teachers, because
sure.
I have to pay them to teach
right.
the extra hour.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So they would have had additional cost. But, you know, if you look at I don't really like to compare America to other countries because we have different philosophies in education and who gets educated. But students in the United States do go to school a lot less time than students in other countries.
Yeah.
So I'd love them to attend another hour. I just don't have the resources.
Well, there's my olden story, Flat Rock High School. We started at 8 in the morning, which is later than many schools do today. But 8 in the morning, prompt, first class, and I was there till 3:30. And then there was sports or whatever extracurricular after that. So it was I'm thinking, what happened over these years? Where did we lose the extra hours to? Did all the kids have to leave early because they had to do their sports before it got dark? Was a health and safety issue? Or they had to go to jobs part-time at McDonald's? You know, before dinner, they had to do their 4 hours at McDonald's. That's really unfortunate because, I mean, I learned stuff. Of course, I loved learning, and I had very good teachers, and it was all fun. But I had time still. I had time for a theater. I had, you know, but I remember we had to come back for theater practice, like 7 o'clock at night or something. So there were evenings that were later. So it wasn't all done. We weren't all out of there, and they locked up the building at 5 o'clock. You know, so I don't know how it is now, but we'll get to it.
You were the class president, so you had all your stuff.
That was just senior year, but
yeah, but still.
Yeah, I was in a lot of clubs too. That was fun. A lot of field trips. one of them to Henry Ford Community College.
All the way from Flat Rock.
Yeah, I was really impressed with their planetarium, which is still here. Okay, the smart bond. We can't talk about all of it, but the additional money, and it's about $76 million, rounding off, it will replace the debt that's being paid off for other purposes. And so just so that people understand, it is a new bond that has to be passed. But, in fact, it's the same amount of money that people were paying this year. Actually, it was a little bit more mills last year, apparently, and it decreased to 5.35, and so it's another 3.5 mills. So, you know, that's in terms of bottom-line dollars, there's no additional increase. But it's going to something different. What's it going to? What's the money going for this time?
So, as you said, it's $76 million. It's not a tax increase because people are going to continue to pay 5.35 mils. How we can do that is we paid off old debt from previous bonds. Just think of it as a homeowner. If you pay off a car and you want to buy another car, it gives you more resources to do that. So the smart bond stands for security, modifications, additions, renovations, and technology. We will provide security at every one of our buildings, the buzzer system, cameras, and so we can lock our doors to make the schools a little safer. We are doing modifications, roofing, windows, you know, those kinds of things. Additions at Gear Park, Henry Ford, William Ford, River Oaks. Because of our growing population, those schools are overcrowded. We have some classes being taking place in libraries and offices, two classes in one classroom. So we need to add classrooms to meet the needs of those students. We have major renovations at Bryan and Snow, where we're going to be encasing some rooms to add some rooms. Could be making some science labs and those kinds of things. Woodworth would get a major addition, a new cafeteria multipurpose room, and then the old cafeteria and multipurpose room will be renovated into classroom space to meet their needs of growing populations. We're going to be doing things like additional buses, 30 new buses. We haven't bought any new buses in 4 years. We should be buying about 10 a year, but just haven't had the resources. Technology, this will allow us to spend $12 million on technology through two different purchases of technology now and 3 or 4 years from now, so that every student will have access to an upgraded technology. And it may not be a computer, it may be some other type of device, but the state's going to be requiring us to take tests online. And right now we can't do that because we don't have enough devices to do that. So this bond has something for every school. Every school in the district will benefit from security. Every school will benefit from technology and transportation. And every school will have some modifications or renovations that will take place in their buildings that were set out as priorities by parents, teachers, and administrators. So we're very excited about this $76 million bond. And we ask people to get more information. We are going to have some informational meetings at our offices on Audette Street on Thursday, September 26th and October 3rd, both at 7 p.m. People can come and get more information. They can go on our website and get information about the bond. But the real exciting thing is this does allow us to borrow $76 million and not increase people's millage rate. So they'll pay the same millage rate of 5.35 mils they're paying currently. If the bond passes, they'll be paying 5.35. I must be honest to say if the voters were to turn it down, the millage rate would go down. I got to believe in honest information.
But all these things wouldn't be done.
None of these things would be done.
For the list here that, again, we mentioned there's 30-plus schools, and the list here, I see an awful lot of the individual buildings. It's a matter of roof or roof sections that have to be redone, which means they must be leaking. They must be falling apart in some way or have
15 of our buildings are 61 to 100 years old. We have 8 buildings 40 to 60 years old. So, I mean, really, our buildings are beautiful. They're gorgeous. They're well upkeep. But they're getting older, and you have to invest in them now, because if you don't, then those little leaks become bigger problems down the road. So this does give us an opportunity to protect these aging buildings.
Someone on the outside of this that doesn't see the list and hasn't gone to all these different buildings and seeing what's going on might ask, though, this is one of the first times I think that there's been major maintenance and upkeep expenses that have gone into a separate bond issue. Wasn't the basic general funding ever intended for ongoing maintenance?
Go ahead, Dave.
It's a big question.
I just wanted to jump in that we did do a similar bond to this back in the early 90s, and where there was some buildings included in that bond, but there was also a lot of general maintenance items, these bigger ticket items that are just too big to
be in any regular budget.
Historically, the district did spend $4 to $5 million a year in maintenance type projects out of the general fund budget. Unfortunately, the state of Michigan has cut us our funding by 8.1%. The state used to give us $4.9 million for at risk. We don't get that anymore. The state used to give us $5 million for hold harmless. We don't get that anymore. So, you know, our in my 6 years, not because me, but school districts across the state have not gotten any new funding. Some of the years we may have gotten a few dollars that are there for 1 year and then they go away. So we've got no increase in our foundation allowance. In fact, our foundation allowance today is 8.1% less than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's the point. I know at the board level, James Schoolmaster made a big deal about the decreasing money from the state. I mean, that's, to me, a personal opinion, unconscionable. I mean, you can talk about maybe how to best spend funding for the schools and requirements and assessment and that. But even to have requirements, again, we talked about Common Core and No Child Left Behind. They've never been properly funded even to help anyone get close to those outcomes. And you can't keep cutting everything. And, of course, well, those teachers make too much money. They get the summers off. Oh, my gosh. They get the summer. Yeah, when they get the summers off, they have to work 3 jobs in order to be able to afford to come back in the fall as a teacher. It's everybody's responsibility here, but I'm just saying a lot of teachers are demoralized because the funding is not there from the state to even continue their salaries that they had a few years ago.
Yeah, and all of us have taken roughly an 8.1% pay cut. All of us are paying a lot more out of pocket for health care like everybody is.
Well, and you started the show by mentioning your cost cutting. I read $600,000. You mentioned $800,000. A lot of that is administrators who have positions that have been cut and reshuffled, but saving that amount of money. And, of course, I'm sure teacher contracts have been established that show freezes or cuts. I don't know. Currently here at Henry Ford Community College, We took a cut 3 years ago. We're taking a more cut this year, and then we're going to have frozen salaries for 4 more years. We lost 14 administrators because the new president said we've got to, you know, everybody's got to take something here, and so nobody is going crazy with spending money right and left, because first of all, it's not coming in, and secondly, there's still an important job to be done. That's my soapboxing. But we have about 2 minutes left, so if you'd like to take the floor, Superintendent Winston or David, and maybe you can point out some things I haven't made. Of course, they did mention the website. Very simple, dearbornschools.org. Okay, all this information is there. There's a lot of information there, so you might have to click around a little bit, but it's all there about the bond issue and even what's going on. Each school has its own website page or something. You can get to that way, too. So should we start with Dave, and then we'll end with the superintendent?
Well, just to reemphasize, the information is there, dearbornschools.org. Look for the 2013 Smart School Bond logo. It's right on the front page. You click on that, it takes you to a separate website. You can download this list of items that each school is getting. You can download our PowerPoint presentation, the general brochure that kind of outlines this whole proposal. So I just highly recommend, if people have anything, any questions, to go there or to call the communications office, 827-3006. We're more than happy to answer questions. We're also more than happy to come out to your organization and make a presentation, an informational presentation about this bond issue. So if you have a club, if you have an organization, a community group, and you'd like us to come out and present, we'll come out and we'll do that.
Yeah, these guys have got the answers. So, Superintendent
Winston? Well, as Plant Moran said, we run our district financially very well, and we continue to reduce our administrative costs and put as much into the classroom as we can. We're very proud of this $76 million bond issue. We've been working on it with our parents and our community for a couple of years to understand the projects that are important to them. This is a no-increase bond. It does allow us to borrow $76 million, and your millage rate is 5.35 mils, and it will remain 5.35 mils. I just want to say, with our new Collegiate Academy, an opportunity for kids to go to college at no cost to them, this is a wonderful opportunity. This is a great place to live, great place to work, great place to go to school. I'm just proud to be part of the Dearborn community, and I just think the Dearborn schools are doing a great job, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for being on the WHOR Journal today. We still have a few moments before our next DJ comes in, and I just had one additional question here. Oh, gosh, is it sliding away now? Oh, it was going to be a killer, too.
It was going to be a good one.
Yeah.
What color is blue, yes or no?
No,
it's
basil. Oh, yes. And so some people want to know in Dearborn that there's no money from this bond issue going to help you move into the new administrative center on Michigan Avenue that's becoming the new city hall, right?
No, there's no money in this bond for that at all. In fact, there's money in the bond to help us do some repairs at our current office building on Audette Street. So nothing in this bond has anything to do with the city moving to the new city offices.
I do understand that the repairs to the Tenac, it's called, right, Tenac building on Audette, I heard at one point that it would be cheaper to tear it down and build a new building there because there are some substantial problems, I don't know, structurally. But these are like temporary repairs, at least for the time being, that will keep the Tenac Center operative. And it might still be, it's still a possibility if there's free space and a cheaper way to do it, that there might be a decision in a year or two or whatever to move into the administrative center. But it hasn't been ruled out anyway, right?
No, as stewards of the tax dollars, we have to look at every opportunity to save money. And whether that's maybe someday looking at sharing offices here at the college, the president and I have talked about that. The mayor and I have talked about, you know, the city offices. Anything that makes sense financially, we owe it to the taxpayers to look at. And so we'll do that. But